Welcome everybody to a Praxis IU Conference Training Series on Safety and Accountability Audits for Grantees of the Office on Violence Against Women, grantees who are conducting or considering audits in their communities. So this five-part series, as you all know, is specifically for audit coordinators. So my name's Casey McGee, I'm with Praxis, and I'll be your host for today's call. So today's part two in the series, we'll hear from Nancy Farron about how to prepare your community for an audit, and I'll let her start in just a little bit. I'll remind everybody, in case some of you weren't on the call with us last week, this September series is geared towards the needs of audit coordinators specifically, or people who are managing audit projects. So we won't be covering introductory audit topics on this series. We will be covering introductory audit topics in our October series. So if you have more general questions, please feel free to call me separately or register for the October series, refer your friends, and so forth. Just a couple of housekeeping details. If there seems to be a lot of background noise on the calls, I will mute the lines during the presentations. Otherwise, I'll leave them unmuted during the whole call. But if you have background noise in your office, you can press *6 on your keypad to mute yourself and *6 again to unmute. And when you're speaking, please remember to say your name and the state you're calling from so we can identify you. And I'll remind everybody that we do take these calls and we make them available for $8 a CD. The order form we'll make available for download from our website at the end of the series. So, Nancy, if you'd like to go ahead and start, welcome.
Sure. Hello, everyone out there. I think that since, in talking with Casey before we started the call, most of you have attended, if not all of you, the Institute. And so I'm figuring you're somewhere in the preparing your community process, or at least you've had some discussions with people about that. So I'm going to keep that in mind as I go along. And so some of this might be sort of a refresher for some of you. And I'm talking both sort of from my own experience and actually coordinating an audit in my own community and having guided several communities through this process. So I always start with this sort of idea because this is what really helped me all along the way, which was that before I bought the community into this process, I had to buy into this process myself. And so I really like to start with thinking about the first assessment being the relationships that you already have within and among domestic violence systems, you know, circles that you travel in, and think about the audit in terms of an expansion of already existing relationships and networks, so that it's important to remember that a big part of an audit is that you want to improve upon relationships and maybe work through some tensions that you've had in the community, so that you don't want to think of it as this is an idea we have and those other people don't think this way, so we're going to sort of be exclusive in our crafting of this audit and the process. I think it should be thought more of in terms of this is our chance to include the people and the maybe agencies or organizations that we've historically maybe had some struggles with, and bring this community together through this process, because in fact when it comes out the other end, it's only going to be as valuable as the people who are going to implement it and who are going to follow it and who are going to believe in it and listen to it. So believe in it yourself first and understand that it is, in fact, a way to, you know, to build on the good work already achieved and not as a way to drag forward sort of negative experiences. It's really a way to get rid of them. And so it's a mindset as much as it is an activity. Those things have to correlate, that that this process is looked at as not a witch hunt and not, but it's looked at as a way for everybody who's trying really hard to do good work, and sometimes that good work bumps into one another in terms of specific purposes, and but to just understand everybody, most people are trying to do the best job that they can with what they're doing. And you know, of course, in the beginning, you need to, I know that you've talked about forming a question and trying to figure out the scope of your audit. And part of that, it's sort of a lot of, you've got a lot of parallel paths going on here, in that you also want to have the people who are going to be involved help you create this agenda and help you create the process so that they own it and they are bought into it. And so you certainly need to give a clear and concise explanation to people about what your intentions are, what brought you to this process in the first place. And I know you have handouts that go over some of these thoughts about the purpose of your audit, and some I'd like to sort of accent, which are, you know, who's been involved in the discussions about the feasibility of this audit. And another one that really I didn't see here, but which is stands out as important, is who's commissioning the audit. In other words, you know, I know that some people, it comes out of a domestic violence, maybe roundtable kind of thing, or out of a DA's office, or for some people it comes out of, you know, actual members of the community getting together and deciding this is a good idea. So something to hold throughout the process is, you know, who came up with this idea and why? You know, was it, is it something that, that people think needs to be fixed? Is it something that's been, you know, your systems are working well and people are kind of all working together now and you feel like it's really a time where you could go forward with a little in-depth, a little more into systems? And so you want to reflect on, before you sit down and sell something to someone, you want to really reflect on what it is you're selling and why you're selling it and in what way it would benefit them in order to have them participate. And certainly some of those ways are as simple as making people's lives within the system easier. I remember working with probation officers. I mean, you know domestic violence work, and you know that it's frustrating and contentious sometimes, and people feel like they're kind of banging their heads against the wall sometimes, and not just domestic violence, but within all of the systems that we work in. And so to present to someone the actual possibility for change is can be profound. I can remember talking with a seasoned probation officer who had been, you know, was really fried and had been burnt out. And, you know, for him to actually see that we were really going to look at things, it wasn't just going to be sort of a bunch of people sitting around talking every month or whatever and then going away on to the next sort of sexy project, that this was really going to be an attempt to address day-to-day activities that impact workers as well as victims as well as offenders, and really, really a good hard look at the system. And that's a real selling point for people who have been doing this kind of work for a long time. You certainly know with police and people within court systems, as well as advocates and certainly victims alike, can get pretty frustrated with the way things work. And it's this sort of whole group of people working as hard as they can, feeling like they're getting nowhere. So I recommend beginning with assembling sort of a small group that's going to be a core group of allies, so that you have perhaps respected members of the community or respected members of whatever systems that you work in to help you do this community buy-in piece. Again, reflecting personally, we had a chief of police who was very excited about the project and very into it, and certainly he was very important in, you know, bringing on board other police departments. It's usually helpful to have, you know, people who see themselves as maybe not so represented in this kind of work to have someone they respect approach them about joining you. And again, ultimately, the ownership of this process is going to be the key to its success. You know, as you sort of build that process up, you're going to want to build relationships. You want to reach out to people that you haven't worked with, or people that, again, that you've had tensions with, and this is really the time to have this open and honest dialogue with people about their frustrations. You want to talk to people who do the work and the people receiving the services, and because you want to, as you're going along, you want to be able to make sure you're looking in the right direction for what it is you're trying to accomplish, and the only way to do that is to include people right in the beginning, to include victims, to include workers, you know, line staff. You don't want all management to be helping you formulate this process. And after you've sort of identified your core group and you've identified the reason that you're there, you want to start thinking about who you want to have participate in this process in terms of the agencies that you want to audit, in terms of the people that you want from those agencies to work with you on the audit. And again, I would say that in one audit from around my community, a challenge was that a particular phase of the audit team was made up primarily of chiefs and administrators and, you know, people who were in charge of various agencies. And there were a couple of problems with that, one of them being that the people were not as available to make meetings or to contribute their time to the process. These were people who were maybe used to, you know, going to meetings and not really doing a lot of hands-on kind of work. So that was one of the issues. And another issue was they were not necessarily familiar with the day-to-day running of their agency, organization, or department. And so you want to resist pulling together only people who are in management positions and administrators, because, again, to inform the process, you need to have people who actually do the work. So now you've got maybe a core group of allies who are going to help you go out into the community and sell this, you know, people who are respected, people who are not seen as confrontational or have been divisive in the community that you work in, but who have been seen as people who bring people to the table. Those are the people you want reaching out. And you always want to carry that tone. You want to carry that tone out into the community, and you want to carry that tone in the beginning. And you are as a coordinator, you are the keeper of the tone, sort of the holder of the high ground. And it's really going to be up to you from beginning to end to provide the leadership that guides this process in integrity. And so you want to choose people who operate with integrity to sell this process. And once you have this core group, and once you've started reaching out into the community, you want people to sign on. And the way that works is usually through memoranda of understanding, which is, I know also you have in your packets, you have an example. And what was helpful to me was, again, back to that police chief who was really highly respected among a law enforcement community, was that he, you know, was the first to sign on. And when you have you know, a copy of something that someone signed on to, it's much easier to go out to maybe the more challenging places to get your memoranda. So you want to make sure that your memoranda contains accurate information about what your expectations are of people, so that if the time comes down the road when you're trying to really pull this together, people have a clear understanding of what it is you're asking of them. And so you want a list that, you know, you're asking for time, you're asking for energy, you're asking for a real commitment to this process, you're asking for people who want to be there. It's not recommended that the people who are there are the sort of low people on the totem pole who get assigned to do it, as we find with many domestic violence specialists on, you know, sometimes in law enforcement. Again, I'll go back to personal experience where one department in particular just put out a listing and a notice about this happening, and people volunteered because they were very interested in the process. And those people throughout the process were definitely brought a lot of energy and a lot of positive stuff to the process. So when you're talking to you know, chiefs or bosses or management about who they might free up to do this process with you, make sure you make it clear that you want people who are interested in being there and who don't sort of feel obligated to go, because you're not going to get a lot of stuff from them. Now, I'm talking a lot and I'm talking fast, and so I just want to sort of go through this, but I want you to be able to ask questions and comment too. So I'll go on to confidentiality, which is, and then we can talk in more detail about some of this stuff.
Nancy, do you want to take a break for questions and answers? Do you want?
Yeah, why don't we do that?
Something? Okay, so
why don't
we'll take
we
a break
that?
Just a little bit.
I don't feel like just sort of lecturing.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So far, does anybody have any kind of issues about this piece, sort of that beginning piece about getting people together and how to sell it and things like that?
I guess I do. I'm from Essex County, New Jersey, and we're okay. Not committed yet to conducting an audit.
Okay.
The domestic violence system has, you know, been looking at this for a long time and seriously interested and thinking that, you know, potentially could do it now. So I guess my question is, you talked about identifying or bringing in a core group of people to start planning the process. This is more like a steering committee, right? They're not going to be the audit team.
Well, I don't think they would need to be excluded from the audit team.
Okay.
I just think that I see them more, this sort of initial thing is more, again, I like to call them allies. In you know, if your community is starting to think about doing this, then you probably want some people who are going to, you know, sort of get it for one thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, a small enough group of people to really explain it to and have them get it, and then have them be able to be sort of ambassadors
mm-hmm.
Out into the community. So it'd be good to, if you create such a core group, it'd be good to have them represent various, you know, agencies and organizations that might be interested.
Okay.
But that I don't think that at all precludes them from
okay.
becoming members.
And if their role is really, you know, executive and administrative,
mm-hmm.
and then they see themselves as sort of, you know, starting and involved, you know, being effective in the planning process, bringing their agency to the table, but then they see someone within their organization who is more, you know, in a position to be familiar with the actual work,
mm-hmm.
then they could delegate that to
absolutely
closer to the line. Okay.
Absolutely.
Line. But you don't want to get to the very end of the line where the person representing the agency has absolutely no authority to go back to their agency. And
that's right. I mean,
okay.
when you have, you know, the people who are line staff and who are, you know, not management people on your team still are going to be people, you know, you're, the people who sign the memoranda are the agency represent, are the, you know, heads of the agencies,
right,
and organizations. And so they're the ones who have to know what's going on and what's to be expected, and that's why it needs to be spelled out clearly in the memoranda.
Okay.
So yeah, the person who ultimately ends up on your team certainly needs the full support of the agency or organization and the understanding. I mean, you talk to both people. You first go out and talk to, I mean, once you get your core, once you kind of are starting to sell it, when you're ready to get to the memoranda stage, you're going to go directly to the top in all of the agencies and organizations to get that approval and to get them to sign the memoranda. So you it's not that you need to exclude these people from the process. It's just that they may not ultimately be the people with the most availability to actually participate,
right,
in the heavy lifting.
Gotcha.
Okay. Anybody else? Questions? Thoughts? Okay. All right. Then I'm going to move on to confidentiality, because this is, you know, this is the key, and it sort of comes up over and over again, and I think it's been being refined more and more over time, because, you know, for one thing, certainly confidentiality about individuals, if you're reading police reports you know, any kind of private individual kinds of stuff, I think that it's almost assumed confidential, although you don't want to assume that. But so often when you think about confidentiality, that's what people are thinking about. But you really have to go beyond that, and you have to think about confidentiality in terms of the audit team discussing things amongst, you know, when you're, after you're discussing incidents or reports or things, text, any kind of analysis, that the confidentiality extends to the people that you're interviewing, such as police officers, and in terms of, you know, if you're thinking about recording the information that you're going to gather. The confidentiality when you're reading reports, usually they're redacted. Most often they're redacted, although I have experienced some people who they have a confidentiality agreement that agrees to just keep the information among the team. But in any event, it extends to all participants in the audit, not just the victims and offenders who are identified. And that was so important, and it has played out to be so important, because if you're asking someone, particularly, you know, line staff kind of people, to talk about how they feel, if you're on a ride-along and you really want somebody to tell you what they think, they're not going to do that if they think that, at the very least, their supervisors and at most the whole community might know who they are and what they're saying. So confidentiality certainly extends out to that. It also extends to materials that you are privy to view. Certain kinds of forms and certain letters, certain kinds of texts that you get exposed to that have any kind of private or sort of just sensitive kinds of information, you want to talk about that too. And just as with the memoranda, it's very important for you to sit with the people who you want to participate, the agencies that you want to participate, and the individuals that you want to have participate in this process. You want to sit down with them and really clarify. From the agency perspective, you want to clarify what is it that they hold important to be kept confidential. Sometimes people go into this sort of with assumptions, and they don't always match up with what the agency expected. And so I think the care should be taken in the beginning you have an example of confidentiality tools in your packet, and they're adaptable to whatever agency or organization it is you're going to be auditing. But you really want to take care to discuss with everyone what their expectations are regarding confidentiality. Are you going to be able to, down to specifics, are you going to be able to go to the police station and take reports from there to another location? Or are you going to have to examine them on site? Who's going to do the redacting and how? And you want to really examine these things up close in the beginning, because there can be some messy misunderstandings, and when you get to the whole end of the audit, you don't want to find out that there's been a real problem here. And the same as when, if you're going out to talk to groups about this process, any identifying kinds of information or materials you can't share in a public way, even to the point of, I'm sure some of you work in very rural locations, and you find that in rural locations everybody kind of knows people, and they know particular incidents, and they know families, and they know histories, and it's not so hard sometimes to figure out who's who. And that's going to happen among your team. You know, it's just going to happen. But as long as you have a team confidentiality agreement as well, about what gets said and talked about within the team, it doesn't go anywhere. But particularly when you go out to the public, you have to be especially careful if you live in a small rural place about how much information you give about certain incidents. Because they might be identifiable by the general public as well. Certainly utilize these tools that you see in your packet, and be very careful with the memoranda, and very careful with the confidentiality thing, because the memoranda, is actually your ability to go back and say, when someone says, "Oh, I didn't sign up for this," you can sort of show them. I actually went through that where a police chief said that he didn't sign up for something, and I had the memoranda with me, and it was helpful in showing them that he had in fact signed up for that. And something that I'm recently sort of running into is talking about, when I said before who commissioned this audit, talking about who sort of has the authority over this whole process in terms of what's going to go out after, what's going to happen with this material, what's going to happen with implementation, who can, maybe squash this report. I actually am familiar with somewhere where, at the end of the whole process, one police chief said, "Well, we've got to run it by our city attorney." And it was like, whoa, nobody had thought about that. The city attorney didn't know about it. It had just been a process that was developed, primarily in conjunction with the local law enforcement and DV people. And when it got to the end and a report was drafted, the police chief said, "I found out I've got to run this by the city attorney." And so all of a sudden now people are thinking liability stuff. And so this is sort of a new twist, and at least it was for me. And so now I would say, that's why I added the part in about, who's driving this process. Who have they talked to about this process? Who, if anyone, have you sat with someone who really can think this through with you in terms of, is there anybody that you're going to be accountable to that you haven't considered, so that you can bring them on board in the beginning and you don't have to, wait to the end and maybe see something get derailed in your process? And so think about that too. Think about when you're talking to people who you're answerable to, not just in terms of perhaps financially, but in terms of logistically and in terms of liability, who you're answerable to, who could throw this whole thing off by saying, no, we don't want this to happen. We don't want people to know about this. We don't want to be held responsible for the things that were discovered or the things that were discussed. And again, I've only run across that once, but it just sort of brings that kind of stuff to mind in terms of when you're in the beginning, which is where I think you are. Any questions about any of that kind of stuff, memoranda kind of stuff?
We're going to talk to somebody on the phone, and we're all like, well, what about this, and what about that, what about that, right? And we're all like, nah. But then you're going to say, okay.
Hello? Hi, I just unmuted the line, so I heard a little bit of background noise.
Oh, okay.
The lines are open for folks, and so if you have any questions.
Okay, no questions? Well, then let me go back to a little more detail about putting your audit team together, which I kind of glossed over a little bit in the sake of giving people time to talk and discuss. What I did and what seems to work well out there is when I put my team together, again, I didn't use all management, and you want to think about in your head, I mean, I did this with them. You can do this before it with your own sort of core group or with the people who have come up with this idea of an audit. I actually did this with the team when I put the team together, which was to, you know, call various agencies and organizations. I actually set up meetings with the heads of those agencies and organizations, went and sat with them personally to explain this process, to explain our ideas about what we were doing, to explain the benefits and the perils for them, that we were, you know, going to really be looking at them in a way that was going to take a certain amount of courage for them to participate. And once I did that and I got the team together, I got I did have some management. It's nice to have a mix. The first meeting was about just the things like dates, best times to meet, not having an assumption by creating a schedule sort of in isolation. And so this is sort of part of the buy-in process. Part of my process was to have the team buy in right from the start that this was their project. You know, I was going to provide the guidance and the leadership for the process, but this was their baby. And that really helped in the long haul, that they felt like they were building this thing from the ground up and right down to the details, right down to, okay, what day and time is best for everybody here to meet. And the group started to build consensus right from jump before we get to the hard stuff around these little particular issues. People started getting to know each other on the team, you know, advocates, police, DA's representatives, people who didn't maybe work together in quite such close proximity on a regular basis. And so dates, times, locations most convenient to the group. I was always very interested in what worked best for them because I wanted a team that was dedicated and was going to, you know, sort of follow me through the fire. And so I did include them in the process as much as possible. If your audit's going to be long-term, I don't know how far you've gotten in figuring that stuff out and whether you know, it's going to be a quick thing or whether it's going to be a thing that takes place over time. You could figure out your timelines. I know there are recommendations in your packets that I think make a lot of sense or are sort of right on. And of course there's training that you've attended, but I think that you need to bring that back to the group or have a practice consult. You need a group training so that the team understands as deeply or almost as deeply as you do what it is you're doing and why they're there. I'll never forget the first time I had a video conference with Ellen, and she asked everybody if they knew what they were doing, and I said no. And I was like, oh, great. So it's good to have people understand the concepts, the philosophies that you've been talking about, and so people have similar understandings of their roles and responsibilities. And, you know, are they in agreement on what it is you've chosen to focus on and look at, and how do they feel about that? It's a very threatening process for a lot of people, in particular when your audit team is made up of the agencies and organizations that you're going to be auditing. There's a whole lot of room for real defensive postures and people feeling kind of threatened by the process. And so it's really important to help people understand that this isn't, you know, an individual witch hunt. People of color, this is a real challenge out there that I just see being faced over and over again, is how to get non-traditional people in the community who are not plugged into sort of mainstream stuff that goes on, who aren't systems-based people, who are marginalized people, and how to truly include them in this process is a real challenge. And so I would suggest that you think about that a lot up front, because when it comes time to, you know, getting a focus group together perhaps, and you want to reach out into the community, you have to build some kind of a connection to that community. And so the best thing to do is to build that into the beginning of your process. So if you can get a representative, if you have communities sort of existing outside of your main community, you want to seek out representatives from that community to help you with this process, or it won't, you know, ring true. And I'll throw little things out there, like, you know, before every meeting I would email or telephone people to remind them. Thinking about your role, you know, I was like the leader, and so I would call, I would make sure things were there, the materials that they needed, you know, they had notebooks, everybody had a notebook. You know, I'd look out for their needs. I would look out for their needs throughout the process. I would make sure there were snacks and food when we had meetings. I would, you know, just help people do this process. And it was all of that stuff made it go much more smoothly. And then I had people map out their organizations. You know, they came in and gave us a lecture, each one of them, about how their agency or organization worked, and that helped us figure out what kinds of, who we were going to interview and what kinds of questions we were going to ask. Does anybody have any kind of questions?
Could you at some point address you know, what the battered woman's role is, how you make that happen? I mean, you talked a little bit about, you know, the system being defensive, and I would guess that happens especially when you have the service recipient and the battered woman as part of the team.
Is that
how that works?
Well, let me tell you, I did not have a battered woman or a recipient as part of the team.
Okay.
I had, and I've actually not seen that in my sort of limited experience, but what we had was community advocates
okay.
and systems-based advocates, and I would strongly urge you to have both. The primary role I think that they play is in focus groups, and I think those should happen throughout the process. So you bring a group of battered women together and in the beginning and say, what is it we should be looking at? You know, what is your experience? You know, help them inform that process. Who should we be looking at? And then all the way through, keep in touch. And, you know, instead of sort of having them feel, and I know somebody's going to talk about this further down the road, so I'll just touch on it, but instead of having them feel like they were sort of, you know, utilized, it's good to let them feel part of the process, too, and let them know that their opinions are very important. So although the tension was certainly there between the advocates and the police, there were no
okay.
there were no victims there.
Okay.
And I'm not sure that they, I'm not sure it should be exposed to that kind of thing. Either way.
Do people have more questions about this issue of how you involve the voice of battered women in the process? I mean, it's something that, this is Casey again from Praxis. I mean, having, I think there's somebody typing in the background. Is there? We talked last week with Ellen, who described this way that you position yourself as an audit team to identify, first of all, the gap between what battered women need from your collective system of interventions and what they receive. And so there is this issue of you need to have the voice of battered women present throughout the entire process. And some teams have debated about whether or not to involve battered women on the team. For the most part, we recommend that people have a very strong voice and an empowered voice of advocacy on the team, and that a lot of focus groups are conducted. But do people have other questions about this, though? Because I do know that there are some teams who have involved community members, meaning people who aren't obviously affiliated with some kind of a system, be a part of the audit team. Just curious if people have, you know, kind of reactions to this or thoughts about this. I know, for example, that Debbie, you and your group in Texas are looking at doing an audit of the crisis services, and so I do think it'd be something worth exploring, be whether or not you'd want to involve women who have used your services to be part of your audit team. I think that that could be quite powerful. So anyway, I just, as Bethana said, maybe I just wanted to throw that out there. It's kind of, there are a lot of thoughts about that, so.
Okay. Yeah, I, you know, in terms of having them be team members, in terms of this kind of an audit, I'm not sure that it would be a good, from my perspective anyway, that, I mean, it's challenging enough to be sort of, you know, every collective action has a purpose, and I think that the purpose of an audit team would not necessarily go with having victims on the audit team.
I don't mind doing it though.
I think there's somebody also talking in the background, because there's
yeah.
I can also put the lines on mute again, but I wanted to allow us to kind of chat.
No, I'm sorry, Casey. This is Debbie, and I accidentally cut off.
Oh, well, that's okay.
I was getting back on.
Okay. Oh, there you are. Hi.
I was like, where'd she go? No, that was it. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut somebody off.
No, that's fine.
No. I did just want to quickly say that, yes, I'm really excited, and my team members were excited that we've been picking up some information in the focus groups. They're not something that we had thought about.
Oh, great.
And
oh, okay.
We are now in agreement that is something that we're probably going to start with, where we had not thought of that before.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
exactly
what they're for. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And I'll let folks know, too, just as a reminder, that at the very last call of this series on September 27th, we'll specifically talk about focus groups. We can't overemphasize their importance to this process. So tune in specifically to that call for this, for discussion, more discussion about this, too. So
wonderful.
And Nancy, this is Casey again, if you don't mind me just jumping in.
Having
talked to a bunch of folks, I don't doubt that there are people out there with questions about how to convince people in your community that this is something that you want to do. So I'm wondering if we can hear from some folks about some issues they've had with that so far. That's often one of the biggest, it's one of the most important and one of the maybe most challenging parts of this process is getting people to buy into it. So
particularly in terms of, community kinds of politics and stuff like that, it's almost always there in the beginning. And so can people talk about any experiences like that they're having or that they've had or anything specific we can address here? Anybody having any problems out there trying to get people to sort of agree to do this? Wow. And so have people already gotten there? Is that what's happened? Have people already gotten there or not even started to go there?
Hi, Nancy. This is Diana from Will County in Illinois. How you doing?
Hi, Diana. Okay. How are you?
I know for us, it's been quite slow going. We have a CCR in our county, but there's a lot of politics.
Yep.
And just the idea of bringing this out, I think you try really not to make it as though one particular group is going to be kind of attack, because that's not what this is about, but it's there's a lot of reluctance, and I think there's even reluctance from, I guess, the group that would be commissioning this would be like our state's attorney's office, so you could tell just it's going to be slow for us even to get through that particular process, I'm really trying to get the buy-in, of these larger names so that we can identify maybe key players so that they can be a part of the audit team. And but we've had to rethink our scope too. So we've been running into a couple of issues.
Mm-hmm.
We're a group that, if somebody doesn't have that problem, that must be wonderful,
Yeah, for right.
But for us, we have a lot of bureaucracy.
Is your effort to sort of identify friends within the bureaucracy?
Well, the hard thing is that the key players, have been identified in the sense of with the CCR, as far as the community members that are really looking at this as saying we really need to rethink the way the system works and how can we better improve access,
mm-hmm.
Now, what our particular audit question is going to be, that it's still in process, but it's gotten to a point now where we're beginning to think, well, maybe we'll just self-identify, I'm through one of the arrest grants, but
mm-hmm.
so I'm not specifically through the state's attorney's office, but the state's attorney's office is thinking, a possibility is just to stay within their own office in order for that to be like the first audit so that
mm-hmm.
people can see,
mm-hmm.
We were willing to do it to ourselves in a sense,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And now we'd like to open it up. So that's kind of what we've been thinking.
Well, sometimes that's what happens too,
mm-hmm.
is that people sort of do that kind of an example. If you're really, finding it impossible to include others in the audit, that do it on a level like that. Do the DA's office, the state's attorney's office, and include people who are maybe afraid to do it themselves.
Right.
So in other words, if you're meeting resistance from the police department, or just say,
mm-hmm.
have members of the police department participate in the audit.
Well, that's a good idea.
Even if it's not auditing them,
mm-hmm.
so that they can actually experience the process from that perspective and understand that it's not threatening and that it's not an attack, that it's what has been your approach to these other agencies or organizations? Have you sort of called them personally? Have other representatives gone to talk to them about this? Or
what ended up happening is after we went to the training and came back, we came back to find out that our audit question was actually being explored by our Family Violence Coordinating Council, meaning they didn't know it was our actual audit, what we were going to explore. A work group was formed, and in a sense, a small kind of like quasi-audit was completed. You know, we're all group members, we're all brought together, and so ourselves, we also made sure that we were part of that work group so that we can begin to kind of create safety, you know, like just building relationships and seeing that, oh, see, isn't this great? We're all looking at a system, an issue. It happens to be the order of protection process, you know,
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
began to explore
yep.
that. So that's kind of started it for us.
Did people that you're finding challenging participate in that process?
They did.
Okay.
Which was great. But they're just intriguing. It's going to be a job for us to do. But I think if we reflect more on, I think if we stay within the State Attorney's Office and maybe do what you said, which we haven't explored, which was bringing in some of those community members as being part of that evaluation, you know, in part,
uh-huh.
and providing their input,
uh-huh.
It will help us, and they may feel like, hey, we want you guys to come this way, you know?
Yep.
So, which is fine. I don't mind taking smaller steps, you know,
yep.
to begin to build that rapport and that relationship. So.
Yep. Yeah, it can be scary.
Mm-hmm. It can. But thanks for that idea.
Sure. Good luck.
Thank you.
Anyone else having any kind of particular challenges out there getting this whole thing started? Okay. Well, I'm running out of things to say.
Debbie, how is your group with all of this? Just checking in with the folks in Texas. I'm just checking in with you because there's a bunch of you down there.
I'm sorry, Casey.
Debbie, are you? How is it for you all? I know that you all are considering doing an internal audit. Have you thought through whether you're going to be inviting other organizations to be part of this audit?
No, we're not at this time going to invite other organizations. We're strictly internal, and we are just looking at our. Violence Intervention Program, which is our batterers program, and safety that they are, you know, we're providing for our clients. We cover four rural counties in central Texas,
mm-hmm.
and large area, and so we have our clients, our victims, you know, that we're providing services in a large area, and we've got prosecutors from four counties, and we've got about eight police chiefs, and you know, so right now we just want to see how we are doing,
mm-hmm.
and then
and
I'm sure
yourself
how the center, body. Our main center, how our center is doing at providing the services. How are we providing safety to all of our victims?
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's what we want to find
yeah.
out, and I think it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a grants to encourage arrest. Program that we're currently, you know, working on. And like I said, it's a challenge, and it's coming too, and I think that we're getting some really good ideas from the trainings that I'm listening to now, and getting the team together. And that's all we're doing right now is we're in the planning stages.
Okay.
And we have 1 year to complete this.
Okay.
It's within our grant.
And so, Debbie, you're auditing your own organization, and your audit team will be made up of people from within your organization?
Yeah, different members from different teams, from, you know, from counseling team, from education
oh, yeah.
team.
Wow, so that presents some of its own challenges, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it does. And
huh.
we're specifically providing the audit within our crisis services.
Yeah.
And within the Batterers Intervention Services, the two areas that kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
And those are the two areas that we will be auditing, looking at. And then everybody else, you know, we've got a team of five of us that will be looking at those. We also have some interns that we're hoping to, we're asking, we have a challenge to pick a project to help us with. And so hopefully we'll be able to come up with a good array of recommendations.
This is Casey. I'm just going to jump in real quick if you don't mind. Thinking on what both Diana and Debbie have said now, that it can be a very disarming thing as an organization, particularly if you are having trouble getting buy-in for an audit project, to say, well, we'll start out by auditing our own processes. So congratulations to both of you for being brave enough to take that on. And the one thing that I'd say, and it sounds like you may be considering this, is being that all intervention systems are connected to each other in very, very detailed ways and bureaucracies, including advocacy, if I might say.
Right.
It can be really powerful to recognize that by inviting into a self-audit the people who have an effect on your service and the people that your service affects. So, for example, your batterer's intervention program obviously is working in conjunction with probation and other parts of the criminal justice system to get control over offenders. So by recognizing that, inviting other people into the process to do an examination of your batterer's intervention process, you're not only exposing them to the process and kind of, you know, with the ends and the means and having them understand exactly what it is that they'd be getting into themselves later on, but you're also going to be getting really, you're getting information that otherwise you don't have access to, which is how are you connecting to other parts of the system. And you absolutely have to connect with other parts of the system. So,
and actually, Casey, we really do, because we have a computer program set up with law enforcement.
Right. So it's tricky with advocacy, thinking about having other organizations come in and be a part of your audit, and there are very specific confidentiality problems with that. So, and we can help you think through that, and I know that there are organizations that have struggled with that too, but it's something I just recommend that everybody consider, even if you're doing an audit of your own system, is you have to recognize the ways in which you're connected to others.
Sure.
This is intrinsically an interdisciplinary process, and so just throwing that out as a suggestion to folks.
And that's really good too, because I know that we're, as we get into this planning part of it, that we're probably going to sit there and say, now how does this go and this
go?
Yes,
it will.
And like I said, we're just getting into the planning stage.
Yeah, sure. So just consider that as a
because you're right. Not only
in the inflammation part.
Not only will they tell you how you interact with them, but when they're members of your team, they can provide you with so much information.
Right.
You know, you'll absolutely come to places where you say, well, you know, what form, how was this form created in the court or with the police or whatever, and you need to have someone there that you can ask that question of.
Right, and I've been reading some manuals, and Casey, you gave me a good reference for reading, and so I've been gathering some different materials for all of that, so I really appreciate it.
Sure. Yeah, good. And I guess one more quick thing I would say about that, about maybe inviting other people, is that when the time comes that you want to audit them, if you're going to say that you need, you want to go in and audit them, that you, in order to sort of prove your point of exposing yourself to others in your audit process, so. Mm-hmm. All stuff to think about.
Well, I have all my little notes down here, and I'll be getting with everybody and talking with our executive director and our grant writer, so I appreciate it.
Great.
I'm going to put you back on speaker.
Okay. That was so interesting, the myriad of ways that people can put these things together.
Yeah, it's true. Every audit looks different.
Yeah, completely. Really interesting. But that's a good thing. It's very organic.
Are there more questions from folks about getting buy-in or memorandum of understanding or confidentiality issues? Nancy, then, unless you have more to say, I think I'll just wrap us up.
Okay.
Okay.
Wrap us up.
So thanks, everybody, for joining us today. And as a reminder, please, please fax in your evaluation forms or email them to us. It really helps us improve our training. And please join us at this same time on Thursday when we'll talk about the role of the audit coordinator. So thanks, everybody. Have a fabulous Wednesday, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.